Welcome to Editing Aloud with South Africa's best journalists. And today we are discussing a small thing which we like to call the budget. Sikonathi, Larry Claassen, Jana. Let's start with you, Jana. I mean, what are your views of the budget overall? I suppose if you were to give it a mark out of 10, how would you rate it?
I don't think the finance minister will like this, but I'm definitely not giving him a pass. And in fact, I'm pessimistic enough to give him maybe a 3 out of 10. You know, we saw the biggest budget deficit in a decade since the global financial crisis, basically. And I think the biggest concern, his budget is a little bit like mine. I can never quite get to the revenue I would like to see. My expenditure is always much more than I was planning for. And I just can't seem to get the debt under control. So, yeah, not a pass from me, I'm afraid.
Oh, that's depressing. I wouldn't like to be in your bank's books at this moment. Sikonathi, what are your thoughts? I mean, how would you... There were some tough options, and I think that the view was that there was limited flexibility for Tito Mboweni to do anything in Parliament today.
There absolutely was very limited room for him to maneuver. However, I'll be a lot kinder than Jana and give him 6 out of 10. Look, it was quite a difficult balancing act, but he managed to... perhaps not rock the boat, especially where Eskom is concerned, give it some money but not all of the money, just to keep the thing going and to remove about 80% of the debt burden or the service costs over the next 3 years. The question, however, that has not been answered is Eskom must in the next 30 days or so settle a 70 billion rand bond that has become due. There's no response to that in the budget. There's only 23 billion rand per year over 3 years. So and then you have he's correctly refused to give more money to South African Airways, and the SABC is still up in the air. So we'll see how it goes. But a 6 from me will suffice.
A 6, Larry. Is that a reasonable? Who would you side with, Jana or the fail mark or the pass mark from Sikonathi?
I would say it's a pass on the standard grade. I don't think it's... I think
that's a big cop-out.
That is.
So a 3 then.
A 3. I think this is an election year budget. It's not meant to disrupt the boat. It's not meant to take any kind of firm action regarding Eskom. It's not meant to sort out the SABC. It is there just to keep everything stable and until after the election. I think we're in a holding battle until May 8th, and then once that's done, then we'll see what's really going to happen in this country. Whether the powers that be really make the big choices that they needed to make.
Well, we're joined on the line by Hilary Joffe, a regular panelist for the show. Hilary, can you hear me? Are you there?
Yes. Hi, Rob.
So your view. In Cape Town, from Cape Town, which is very far away. Your view on the budget, and I mean, you know, Larry says that he felt it was an election year budget, but I mean, I think that the minister didn't indulge any populist tendencies. He didn't, you know, he did say he was going to cut civil servants. He did talk about you know, retrenchments for 30,000 senior civil servants. I mean, what were your thoughts about that aspect of it?
In October, the budget looked very bad. The numbers looked very bad. There was a big red revenue shortfall. They hadn't managed to rein in expenditure very much. The deficit blew out. The debt blew out. People thought October was a sort of holding statement and February would look better and involve more decisions. Now it didn't, and in fact, looked worse. The revenue shortfall is even worse than it was in October. On the upside, the spending, for the first time, they have managed to cut the ever-rising public sector payroll. But they've done it in a way which worries me a little bit, because I must say this early retirement, it's people from 55 to 59, and no doubt it will be a good one getting rid of a lot of dead wood, but one also fears it's going to get rid of a lot of skills and experience. So it's a bit of a double-edged sword. But at least they look like they are cutting expenditure in the way that we've long been looking to them to do. And they're also cutting the public sector payroll by natural attrition, which they let see happen. So I think there's some upside on the spending side. And they didn't add, they didn't go populist, they didn't go pre-election, they didn't start adding lots of new expenditure items. They really kept the lid on. But the point is they're going now to the rating agencies with a budget which has blown out even the expenditure ceiling, which they've been protecting so carefully for many years. And the reason for that is Eskom, because really, it's the Eskom budget.
Yes. Hilary, another thing they seem to have cut was the quality of your line. So let's call you back in a second and hopefully get a better reading on that. But just initially, Sikonathi, I mean, if there was a theme for this budget, it was Eskom. You know, a feature that all the politicians and the businessmen spoke about after the budget was the fact that Tito Mboweni said he was going to give another 69 billion rand to Eskom. How significant is that? It's obviously far less than they wanted.
It's far less than Eskom wanted, but it's too much. Let's just start there. Eskom this is the third bailout in the last 5 years. Not many people choose to remember that. On the 25th of September 2015, they received 83 billion rand. 23 billion rand of that was in cash, and the 60 was in a write-off. All that money has been blown. It's gone. The PIC had to come in with an emergency 5 billion rand in February last year because, again, Eskom had run out of money. Now, the question Tito Mboweni has not answered, what will he do next year? Because Eskom will be coming back demanding more money. What will he do? Since indeed it's an election budget, he didn't tackle the matter that Eskom really does need to tackle. It's got 47,000 employees. The World Bank says they should only have about 15,000.
Three times what they should have.
Exactly. That discussion will not be had until after the general election. Will the rating agencies, will the markets wait, will time wait for the elections?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, but having said that, Jana, was there any option? I mean, you have to keep the lights on. Otherwise, it's an admission of defeat. Economic growth falls through the floor and you're done.
No, absolutely. I think it's obviously also much less than what Eskom really wanted, which was, I think they asked 400 billion. And I don't think that the bailout, I agree with Sikonathi, you shouldn't be giving them money unless we see real signs of reform, of retrenchments, which Cyril Ramaphosa has said will not happen. But, you know, the other question is, yes, we can keep the lights on, but at what price? Must we have that conversation where we say, you know, Eskom is in deep trouble, it is way too indebted, we need to take some of this debt off their balance sheet so that we can have competitively priced electricity, because the reality is that Eskom still wants massive above inflation tariff increases, and it leaves the rest of the economy uncompetitive. So I think those are the two sides of the debate that we need to have. It's a difficult position.
And he used this term in reference to Eskom and bailouts and all the state-owned entities. He said, we have to cross this Rubicon if South Africa is to survive and be what it can be. He's totally failed to cross that Rubicon. The president, by that admission alone, that no one will lose their jobs, was a total cop-out. So we don't yet have the reset, the rebase that we want. Of course, now that may necessitate lowering the mark.
So Hilary Joffe, you're back with us. You know Eskom pretty well. I mean, did the minister have any choice for what he did? And as a consequence, how do you think the ratings agencies will perceive the fact that we're lurching another 69 billion towards another state-owned entity that clearly hasn't got control of its finances?
People had a bit of a sense of deja vu at Eskom because people have forgotten that the last Eskom bailout from the state was also 23 billion about 5 years ago. I think they didn't really have their ducks in a row. There's still a lot that's really up in the air. And I think this bailout, we're not really clear what it is. And what the conditions are and what needs to be delivered for them to release the money and whether they're even taking debt off the balance sheet. So I think it's important that they are seen to have made the move, and lenders will probably respond positively. But Moody said, do not give them the money unless you have delivery on cost cuts and reforms. So we'll see whether Moody is going to buy this.
So, yeah, I mean, Moody's just now, they issued a statement, and they described the budget as, they said it leads to a renewed upward revision in fiscal deficits and debt levels. So it sounds a lot like Moody's, doesn't view this particularly well. I mean, like you said, Eskom hasn't delivered what it wants and what it must give in terms of agreements on cost cuts. And as Sekanati mentioned, they've got far too many staff.
I think actually, if you look at the coal costs dwarf the cost of the staff. So it's really not just a matter of people. It's really going deep into their supply chains and the whole way in which Eskom operates. And restructuring, reconfiguring, as the Minister of Finance put it, the whole shop. And he's putting this curator type person in to oversee it. But we haven't actually yet seen a credible plan of what is Eskom going to do and why. To unbundle itself into two divisions, to cut its cost base. So I think that's what we are really waiting to see. And I imagine that Moody's will be asking hard questions about what is going to be delivered in return for this kind of never-ending support.
Okay. And besides that, I mean, if we look aside from Eskom, Jana, the numbers themselves weren't great. We saw the GDP revised downward from 1.7 to 1.5. If we look besides Eskom, the debt to GDP ratio going up beyond 60%, it looked pretty grim despite Eskom, right?
Yeah, I think the scary number for me was it 1.2 billion rand that will have to be borrowed a day, and we pay a billion rand in interest a day.
Your bank balance seem fine.
It makes it a little bit better, I'm not going to lie. But I think the other thing that's depressing that we haven't even touched on is just how the taxpayer keeps getting milked, the burden just keeps, maybe not as bad as we saw last year, but certainly it's not, there's no end in sight there's no light at the end of the tunnel from a personal taxpayer perspective either.
I mean, Larry, you agree with that? I mean, you think that, we haven't had the bracket creep essentially of, the personal tax cuts we had in the Manuel era and Pravin era, it looks pretty dire.
I think it will be a while before we see tax cuts again. And as what Jana said about the kind of creep we're having, fuel is getting higher, drinks are getting more expensive, now we even have a sugar tax, so there's no joy in life anymore.
Carbon tax on your car, I mean, it doesn't stop.
Sekanati, I mean, your view on the fact that the personal taxes, we're being multi, fuel levies going up, which means that, people's fuel to go to work is going to increase, taxi fares are going to increase, just the cost of being alive is increasing for people.
Well, this is one thing South Africans will always try to avoid. That is the cost of electing people who cannot govern. It now hits you directly in your pocket. That's exactly what you're getting. On June, I think it's the June the 5th, 9 cents per liter increase in your petrol price. That hits directly yourself in the pocket, and then you get the sugar and all of that. What we don't have on the economic front, the government is taking everything, taking every cent they can get from you, road accident fund and everything increasing. What we don't have is someone standing out there and say, this is just short-term pain. We're going there, and that is the long-term win-win solution for everybody. Mboweni could not do that, because if he had to do that, he would have said, guys at Eskom, guys at South African Airways, let's close the damn thing down. Let's accept that there will be temporary job losses, there will be temporary pain, but it's a win-win for all of us.
Guys, so one of the big issues that came out was we saw in technicolor detail just how badly SARS had been pillaged over the last couple of years. And the consequence of that was that we're just not collecting tax from people. Even though, we are all paying more tax, they're not collecting it as well as they used to. Jana, your thoughts on that? I mean, it looked pretty dire. It's 15 billion rand worse than even the dire projections in October.
Yeah, I think that's definitely part of the reason, is the fact that the capacity is just not there. But I also think the economy has just been so weak. I think if you look at the numbers that came out in December for things like retail, manufacturing, mining, all fell way short of what people were expecting. So I don't think we should discard the impact of just an economy that's just in the doldrums, really.
Sekanati, I mean, SARS has had its own internal issues as well. It's had Tom Ayani getting rid of anyone who could do their jobs, and the fact that they closed down the large business center and their illicit economy unit, which seemed crazy at a time when they needed more tax. They plan to now fix that, reintroduce those things. Will that help in the long term, or has there been so much damage done?
It definitely will help in the long term, but in the short term, even the October budget that's coming up, the midterm, will still not look as good, because it's much more difficult to build these institutions and the capacity than it is to destroy. So what Tom Moyane and Jacob Zuma did over a period of 4 years is going to take us much longer to get it on track. But it's a good start, and the commissioner will be appointed, Titombo, when he said, in the next few weeks. So that's a good start. And what will help, as you saw, with the raid on Adriano Mazzotti yesterday, SARS is desperate to show that it's there. We it's now not business as usual anymore. We want to collect money from the smugglers and the illicit traders. So it's a good start. It's not going to be immediately solve all the problems, because you have to go and train people and find those lost skills.
Hilary Joffe, are you still on the line? I hope, from Cape Town. Oh, she's gone. We'll come back to her in a minute. Larry, your view. I mean, SARS, can it recover from where it is now? I mean, is it, besides just knocking on your door, do you think it'll get the capacity back to knock on smugglers' doors and the Mazzottis of this world?
I think it will, but it's not going to be easy. I think they've lost a lot of the last 5 to 10 years under Tom Moyane. It's kind of a tragedy. The real tragedy of what's happened to SARS is it was one of the kind of standard bearers of South African transformation over the past 25 years. When SARS was, when the ANC took control of the government, and SARS was basically a kind of like an administrative tool, and they turned it into like a real kind of revenue generating tool, and became a real kind of driver for implementing government policy or funding the government policy. The demise of SARS kind of is evident in the budget today.
Clearly people were not that keen to pay tax, and a whole lot of people weren't able to pay tax. You know, corporates are suffering under a really dire economy. But there was a very dangerous and irresponsible call by Helen Ziller, Sekonathi, a couple of weeks ago, for a tax boycott, a tax rebellion as such. How does that kind of affect a situation like we have now? We have the country struggling to collect money. Is it not complete lunacy and highly responsible for a politician like that to say something like that?
It's totally irresponsible. However, those utterances does not automatically follow that law-abiding citizens will suddenly turn themselves into criminals following incitement by a government official. I think someone should pay her a visit with a charge or two inciting people to commit a crime. Now, yet you can totally understand why she felt that way and even thought she should encourage this campaign. I mean, it's us, the dumb ones, that are paying tax. The real guys are having it so good. We hear
shifting profits to Mauritius.
Exactly. Or even they're keeping them under their mattresses. Some have got bunkers in their own houses, and they have not even paid the capital gains tax on that. So it's you and I who indeed have something to fear, a reputation and a criminal record. The criminals are having it so good already. Talk about the 7 billion rand that the tobacco industry says is being uncollected as tax. Look then, the burden being shifted to individuals, to people like ourselves and indeed the companies. Year in, year out, they will increase the excise duty on tobacco and on alcohol. But there are guys, companies who really make a lot of money and don't pay a cent in tax.
That's incredibly true. Jana, one other thing that I thought was a weakness of the budget was that, you know, he spoke about SARS, he spoke about various other measures, but he didn't really talk about creating jobs. And surely that's the one thing, the lack of specific targets or specific methods to create jobs that was really lacking in this budget. Would you agree?
Well, he did downgrade the growth forecast for the year, and I think, as we know, 1.5% growth is not really sufficient to create jobs. I think at this point, government is just hoping to stop the bleeding when it comes to jobs. And we did see a slight uptick in was it Q1 or the last data, Q4 data that came out just the other day, though that's probably a lot of holiday jobs as well. So the jobs, I mean, jobs should be the thing that we keep talking about all the time, but I think
as journalists, we always do.
I think the the scale of our unemployment problem is just so vast that you just, you know, and we're so tired of it. Nobody's really bringing fresh ideas to the table. So that's why you see over 500 billion rand going to social grants, because government can't find a can't seem to find a politically palatable solution for our jobs problem. So let's throw money at social grants and hope that that pacifies, you know, is enough to keep the electorate happy. But really, what we should be doing, you know, between Eskom and unemployment, we should never sleep.
This is a terrible idea. Sekonathi, your view of where the weaknesses were, besides a lack of specifics on jobs, and I certainly think a lack of specific commitments from Eskom is also another weakness.
There's definitely a lack of ambition on the part of the people today in government. The job of a leader is to stand on the mountain and point at the destination and get the foot soldiers to hack their way through the forest to get there. We did not have that. We did not have that in the state of the nation. We did not have that in the budget. If Tito Mboweni stood up there and said, in the next 3 years, I want this economy growing at 3%, therefore, we will start here. We slash the cost of doing business, we will close the tap at South African Airways so that people can start investing in this economy. And we will build not only the 3,000 kilometers of roads, tarred roads that they will build, we will build 30,000 kilometers of road. Of course, that all has to be paid for, so that's where the problem is. But as it stands now, he merely repeats that we'll get 1.5% growth. What do we want to get out of it? So we can put measures in place and work towards it.
So no roadmap. One of the provocative questions he asked, Larry, which I thought was certainly would have irritated the unions and as well as parties like Julius Malema, was he posed a question about why we even have state-owned companies at this point. All they do is they guzzle cash. I mean, surely it's a valid point. It's not going to please the unions to hear it, but I mean, surely he has a point?
I think he does have a point, but that's a question that's not going to be answered today. I don't think there's any question that's going to be answered after the May election. I think that's something that's going to be sitting with us for a while. I don't think when you look at the why we own state-owned industries, that's actually one of the first questions you should ask. Why should SAA actually exist? If you think about that, we've got all kinds of discount airlines. The SAA is not a railway. They don't have any kind of public mandate. So why are you putting money into an organization that's whose role has been filled by the private, already been well filled by the private sector? So, but I don't think he's going to be answering that. I mean, you can ask that question now, but answering it, that'll be a long time. Getting on firm answers on that will be a long time coming.
But I mean, Jana, your view on it. I mean, surely it's better for the private sector to run these enterprises.
Well, let's talk about SAA. I mean, part of the reason why they won't just shut it down is because it employs 10,000 people, and you're not going to shut it down in an election year. But, you know, and I think there are parts of the SAA business that could very easily, I mean, one of the areas that has been talked about is, for example, the air chefs business that could potentially very easily get an international investor, and it moves away from just supplying SAA flights with meals in Joburg to supplying, you know, potentially any airline that lands here and that, you know, have potential for growth and job creation. The other problem is if you try and get a buyer in now or a strategic partner, it is in such poor shape that you kind of have to get it to a point where either you can sell some of the parts of the business. It's just been so mismanaged. I mean, they said this week they've, for the first time in 10 years, made a gross profit, not even an operating profit, a gross profit on their Joburg-London route. That's a route that they really should be making money on.
The question is,
yeah, how do you, for 10 years, not make any money on it and keep it going and keep it going. I think SAA, I feel quite sorry for the new leaders at SAA. I think they're really trying to bring commercial acumen into it. You know, a lot of them have private sector experience. And I think they're just as flabbergasted as we are by the extent of the complete and utter mismanagement that's been going on there. Whether they'll have enough time to really try and turn it around, I mean, that will ultimately depend on Tito Mboweni and where the government give them more money. And I mean, even in that case, it may be down the rabbit hole too far. But I agree. I mean, there's no need for a state-owned airline. Mm. But just closing it down is not quite as simple as that, because, you know, there are jobs on the line in an economy where we can't afford to lose more jobs.
I think for Tito Mboweni to be asking that question is a classical cop out. He is the governor. He is the person who should be providing answers to that question. He can only ask that question. All of us can. Someone has to provide the answer, and that's him in government. I also asked him about Petro SA, which has been bankrupt for years, like South African Airways.
Making spectacular losses.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. He said the least said about Petro SA, the better.
Well, I mean...
And he had very harsh words about South Africa's hangovers with the Soviet-era communism and things. Mm-hmm. Yet... he's totally powerless to actually say, guys, if you put me here to be your finance minister, this is what will be done, and we will do it.
Just one last point on that, because, I mean, the issue is the power, to some extent, lies with the unions, because they are the ANC's partner, COSATU certainly. How do you see that playing out in the next couple of months, certainly at Eskom and other entities that need to have a confrontation with the unions?
Look, there definitely will be. By the way, that's what we state in our cover in the Financial Mail. There definitely will be some confrontation after the election. Mm-hmm. Because even as though Cyril Ramaphosa said, all these companies that will be split out of Eskom, and obviously South African Airways will be 100% owned by the state, the budget review sneaks in a private an equity partner, a strategic equity partner. So the trade unions didn't know that going into this budget. When the election, the president says in the transmission company we have to sell a 30% stake. Hell will break loose, but that will be after the election. So there will be some uncomfortable days ahead in the short term. The real deal is Cyril Ramaphosa should stand up there and say, short term pain, long term win.
Well, that's us for today on Editing Aloud, and I think Sagnati summed it up perfectly. And join us again next week.